Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we look at how we've adapted to a new normal during the pandemic. From the business of restauranteering and the new habits of composters, to learning from the past to prepare for the future, we're exploring what came before and what lies ahead.
People in charge of the collections and the acquisitions looked at me and were like, what the hell are you trying to sell me cookery for?
These kids are so young and we're teaching them that it's okay to throw out all this food, and we have to figure out a way to educate these students to make them, you know, lifelong environmentalists.
Tune in to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts for the latest stories in the world of food.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. I hope everyone is safe and well, wherever you are on Earth. And our studio is currently closed due to the outbreak of coronavirus in New York City. So I'm recording this episode remotely from my apartment in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And this show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is pion sushi? We hear dashi wame in izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Hirohisa Hayashi, the chef and owner of Hirohisa in Soho, New York City, which has a precious Michelin star. And Hiro's culinary experience is unique. He was traditionally trained in Japan and came to New York, cooked at the Sushi Samba, which is a both Latin and Japanese-themed creative restaurant. And he also had a casual neighborhood restaurant in Brooklyn called Hibino before he opened the Hirohisa in 2013. So today we'll discuss what his unique culinary journey has taught him so far, how he expresses his philosophy of Hirohisa at Hirohisa, how he's coping with the challenges caused by the coronavirus, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about the topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japaneseats@heritageradionetwork.org. And let's start a conversation with Hirohisa Hayashi. Hello, Hiro. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hi, Akiko.
So, long time no see. How are you?
It's been a long time.
Right. Yeah, the last time we met, it was at the opening of Hirohisa, actually. So, it's so 7 years ago.
Right.
But I keep hearing great things about what do you serve, what do you do at the Hirohisa? So congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, so first of all, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
I was born in Fukui Prefecture, which is the very, very countryside. Probably a couple hours drive from Kyoto City, but very, very countryside.
Right. And then actually I went to Fukui Prefecture to visit one of the oldest kombu seaweed company, Okui Kaisedo. That was a really remote place, but it's a very impressive product they sell. So it's, like you said, it's close to Kyoto, but sounds like it's a very rich area because there's a port for the merchants dealing with kombu shipment from Hokkaido, where the kombu is harvested. I think 90% of kombu. So anyways, so what did you eat when you grew up?
Most of the things like local fish, vegetable, most of the local ingredients.
Mm, which is rich because it's facing the Japan Sea. You have different kinds of fish, and yeah, I'm jealous that you grew up eating it. So how did you get into cooking?
Actually, my family business is the restaurant business. Since my great-grandfather, which is more than 100 years ago.
Wow.
And my father is still the chef, and he owns his restaurant, and probably DNA.
Hey, wow. So is it a traditional Japanese restaurant?
Yes.
Wow.
Kaiseki restaurant.
Oh, wow. Okay, so now it makes sense that you have a hirisa. So where did you work before you came to the U.S.? It sounds like you worked at your family restaurant?
No, never. My father didn't want to.
Okay.
I train in Kyoto City. Mm. The restaurant's name is Tankuma, which wow. is the... they have two Michelin stars, very old Kyoto Kaiseki restaurant.
Right. That's one of the best in Japan about Kaiseki cuisine. So, wow. So, I know it was not easy to train yourself at the Tankuma because it's such a very well-respected restaurant, but what is the most challenging part of studying Japanese cuisine?
So learning Japanese food, like techniques, whatever, means I need to study besides cooking, like drawing, picture, ikebana, flowers, tea ceremony, like many things, makes the Japanese food together.
Wow. So was it a requirement by the restaurant, or you just decided to learn these?
Requirement.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's amazing. So why do you think they asked you to learn tea ceremony, like drawing pictures and ikebana? That's pretty deep.
Yeah, also hard.
Right. So is that the spiritual thing that they wanted you to learn?
I think especially the Kyoto people, they're in the same industry. So running tea ceremony, like drawing picture, making ceramics, making food, making the same thing.
Wow.
They're
okay.
Each other.
Hmm. Well, that's very interesting because we never think of it in American food industry. So, so the process of making comes from the same place. You spiritually focus on what maybe how you serve your customers or how you make the most of ingredients, probably. So do you think, well, this is my imagination, but, you know, when you talk about, say, ikebana and tea ceremony, those things face ingredients, and you think of hospitality, right, for people who enjoy it. So I thought it was the same as food like Kaiseki cuisine. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, wow, that's interesting. And, so Then when and why did you come to New York?
It's simple. I grew up in like very big countryside. I moved from like big city.
Right.
Also, New York is one of the biggest city in the world.
So, did you know anybody in New York before you came?
No, but I know some great Japanese restaurant in the New York City.
Wow. So you came to New York, and then did you work at the Japanese restaurant in New York first?
I started Japanese. It's called Sushi Samba, which is the Japanese South American fusion.
Right. So that is interesting, because Sushi Samba, I mean, they have the branches in London, Miami, Las Vegas, and Amsterdam, but New York branches closed in 2017, so 30 years ago. And I was wondering, because it's you are trained in one of the most traditional kaiseki restaurants in Kyoto, and you came to New York City, and Sushi Samba is a very Latin American concept, right? Sushi and Latin American.
Yes.
Right. So why did you, how did you get the job at the Sushi Samba?
I met the guy who is the executive chef at Sushi Samba, and he invited me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Right. Well, I understand the most traditionally trained chef coming to this new concept. I think you really supported the Sushi Samba's prosperity now. So what kind of dishes did you make at the Sushi Samba?
It's very fusion, Japanese and Latin American cuisine. So, which is the like sushi and like ceviche, tiraditos, many Latin American ingredients and spices, herbs.
And did you serve traditional dishes too?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah, I was looking at Sushi Samba's current menu as of yesterday, and I saw traditional rolls and traditional nigiri. So I was pleasantly surprised. So maybe change along with how people started to appreciate traditional sushi. All right. So so what do you think? What did you learn at Sushi Samba?
Not authentic, not traditional Japanese cuisine. That was very fun to me. many like ingredients, vegetables, spices, herbs I never used. So that was so interesting. A lot.
Right. And probably customers are very different from you who you met in Kyoto.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So you left Sushi Samba and opened Hibino in 2007, which was in Brooklyn, Cobble Hill in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I know it was very popular. And what was the concept of Hibino?
It's comfort food, also traditional. The things we eat every day, something like that.
Interesting. Because you started as a kaiseki, very formal restaurant, and then you went to casual Latin, Japanese Latin restaurant. So you wanted to serve something like home cooking?
Yes.
Okay, why? Why is that?
Because it's easier to start. This is my first own project.
Right.
So easier than kaiseki. Also, I wanted to go back to like traditional way.
Right. And I know it was very popular. So what kind of dishes did you serve at the Hibino?
Very comfort food, like Japanese people eating at home every day.
Like soba noodles to...
Soba noodle, udon noodle, and chicken, fried chicken, green mackerel, stewed potato and beef. Very authentic.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a different concept from izakaya, right? Izakaya is more for drinking and small plates. And they serve dishes like udon or soba noodles. But Japanese home cooking, like everyday cooking, is very good, healthy, and delicious. But not many people are cooking it here. So you are one of the very few precious chefs who are doing it. So... Okay, and but you chose Brooklyn, right? Cobble Hill, Brooklyn.
Yes.
So why did you choose Brooklyn?
Just simply rent is cheaper. or I like the neighborhood.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a very casual, but people, I think Cobble Hill people knows what's good food is. So, okay. So what do you think you learned from your first, your own restaurant at Hibino?
I knew that non-Japanese people, they enjoy what I do, so.
So maybe you earned some kind of confidence.
Yeah.
Right. I'm curious, what kind of dishes were popular at Hibino?
Hibino, I was doing called obanzai, which is the traditional comfort dishes at home. So every day, 3-4 different things, daily changes. People love that so much. So some people come or take out almost every day.
Wow. Right. So that's a completely different and a new demand for Japanese cuisine, right? Because it's not sushi. It's not ramen. You don't eat them every day. But Japanese food is essentially cleaner, lighter, and healthier compared to fast food items, or in general, it's just a cleaner, lighter food. So yes. It sounds like there's a demand broadly in population in Brooklyn. So that was great. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll discuss Hiro's beautiful restaurant, Hiroshita, and how he's coping with the challenges surrounding the coronavirus outbreak. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Hiroshita Hayashi, the chef and owner of Hiroshita in Soho, New York City, which is a precious Michelin star. So let's talk about Hiroshita. So you opened Hiroshita, your your name represents yourself. So it's in Soho in New York City in 2013. And it's a different kind of restaurant from Hibino, of course. So what is the concept of Hiraishita?
It's called Kappo style, which is a little bit, the kaiseki is very strict, many rules. The Kappo is the, like similar to kaiseki, but more casual and less rules.
Yeah, so kaiseki, if you have kaiseki cuisine, there's like strict course menus, some items, some the, you know, like there's all this like small appetizer to soup to variation of small plates. That's just like a whole sequence. But what I heard, Kappo, is more of you have a conversation with your customer face to face, and then you accept some requests and you just so whatever they want to eat. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Create the menu together.
What is it?
Like a create the menu together.
Do you have any example of like, you know, say
something say grilled fish on the menu. Maybe guests say, hey, the chef, I want this fish steam. Let's steam something like that.
Right. Wow, that's great. So, yeah, you can. It's a collaboration, and because you actually get customized, it's kind of like tasting menu or participating in omakase menu. So, that's awesome. What is the theme of Hiraishita?
Authentic, traditional, kappo.
And I also heard you're featuring your the ingredients from your hometown, Fukui Prefecture.
Yes. Most of them are like craft, ceramics, washi, paper, knives.
Right. So just going back to when you first trained at Tankuma, you have to study tea ceremony, ikebana, and drawing pictures and those things. So it's the same idea that what you serve at the restaurant just doesn't mean food, but serving vessels, cooking utensils, those things come together, and then result is the dinner. That's how I think. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what kind of ceramics do you serve?
That's from my hometown. It's called Echizen Yaki.
Wow. Okay, so Echizen Yaki, what kind of, how does it look like?
It's simple, like natural.
Right, it's not instead of like many pictures and painted or anything, it's more like earthy, right? Yeah, and this sounds like your style of cuisine is enhanced by the simplicity, because your food, as far as I know, is very clean and ingredient focused. So what kind of ingredients are there from Fukui Prefecture?
So, kombu, that you told me, Okui Kaiseido.
Right. Oh, you use Okui-san's, Okui Kaiseido's kombu?
Yeah.
Wow.
Also, many gray fish.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious. What kind of special fish do you have? Because Fukui Prefecture, because it's facing Japan Sea, it's a very different product, I think.
Fluke.
Okay.
So winter sweet shrimp. And
okay.
Craft. Ichizen Club is one of the famous clubs in Japan.
Right, so Ichizen Club, it's like a prize at the table. Wow.
Yes.
Okay, and then the sweet shrimp is just, it's not just a name, like it's really sweet shrimp from Japan Sea. So, yeah, I feel like when the city is ready, I have to go back and taste your dishes when we reopen Hiroshita. You told me about what you served at the Hibino, but at the Hiroshita, maybe you can give us some examples of what kind of dishes you serve.
Two pages, and one is the omakase, like chef's tasting menu,
mm-hmm.
and the other side a la carte.
Mm.
Also, pretty unique because the you can order a single item from the omakase menu, whatever you like. So the guests create their own omakase if they want.
Right. Oh, wow. Right. Because you have only 20 seats, right?
Now, 19.
Okay. Whoa, that's even smaller. Right. So that's why you can do kind of customization almost for everybody. So do you serve more like a kaiseki style dishes? Meaning not, you know, home cooking, but it's more for similar to what you cooked in Kyoto?
Yes.
Okay. Right. All right. So, yeah, well, speaking of, we are talking about this whole reality of the COVID-19. So, what happened when the restaurants were told to close in New York City? What was your reaction?
Of course I was shocked, but it's for everybody. Nothing right. that I can do. And
right.
so, of course, the we got a lot of fish, meat, vegetables, liquids. So I decided to serve for everybody.
Well, you mean your regular customers?
Whoever it is, whoever who wants food, I just give them all.
Oh, wow. So you just announced on social media?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so generous. So so the people came and just picked them up at Hiroshita in person?
Yeah.
Wow. But I heard that because you did that because you have fishmongers that you've been working with for over 15 years and you wanted to support their business too. So you made a kind of take out to continue their business. And also you kind of rejected the donation for the free meal from your customers so that they can spend that money to on your friend chef's takeout business. So I think that was great. So is that what you did?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're a good person. I was so moved to hear that story. But currently you're offering takeout delivery menus on for fee. Well, this time we have to survive you in this situation. So how does it work? What kind of takeout delivery menu are you offering?
It's simple, some rice dishes. And
okay.
Also, I was supposed to open our brunch, new sushi restaurant, in the April.
Oh, okay.
So we try to introduce our new sushi restaurant for the public. Menu, two options. So
one
from us, one from our new sushi restaurant.
Oh, Cool. That's why I saw your website and now have a kaisen chirashi, uni, ikura don, nagi don, those things more like sushi things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so interesting. So you are planning to open a sushi place?
Yes.
Next to Hiroshita, or where is the location?
It's next street, Sullivan Street, just 2 blocks away from us.
Wow. Okay. Well, so, and then unfortunately the corona hit, but yeah, it's a great way. Everybody wants good sushi now, so I'm sure you're going to be doing well once you reopen it. It's going to be a traditional sushi menu?
Yes. And I try to put our like kaiseki technique into the like sushi. So a little bit different from the like edamame style.
Oh, okay. Huh. What's the example? Maybe you can give us some example.
We do bowl sushi, which is similar to bowls. Also, box style sushi. It's called oshizushi, press sushi. Also, saiku sushi, which is like a decoration sushi.
Yeah, saiku sushi is actually, by the way, it's beautiful and stunning, and you can be really creative, but I haven't seen it so much. So, yeah, that's great. What's the name of the new restaurant, the sushi restaurant?
It's called Ikumi.
Ikumi. Okay. Why did you name the restaurant Ikumi?
it's some idea from myself, our co-worker, and some idea, and most of the people chose the Ikumi.
Okay. So it's like, I don't know, the growth and the beauty or the kind of implication of it?
The name?
Yes. What's the meaning of it?
It's my sister's name.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Because the New York City called, like, the branch called Sister's Restaurant, something. And then right. My guy's idea. My sister's name.
Sister restaurant, so literally it's sisters. Right. Also, is she in Japan? Does she live in Japan?
Yes.
Okay. She's got a reason to visit New York then. Okay, so as of today, June 22nd, the New York City is at the stage 2 of the business reopening, starting today. So what is your plan for reopening Hiroshita and opening Ikumi?
We just stay, keep doing delivery and takeout until the next phase 3. We're not going to do the outside seating because I don't think our food goes with the street outside hot.
Right. Yeah, and especially it's getting very hot outside in New York City too. So, okay. So I look forward to the stage 3. The stage 3, you can seat people inside with 6 feet spacing, right? Mm-hmm. Or partitions, right? So, okay. Yeah, so what have you learned so far from the experience dealing with the coronavirus?
I think it's good for the restaurant industry because we care about more, like, how do you say, like cleaning or washing hands. We have to care about more, much more than before for everything.
Right. Interesting. Right. Yeah, that reminds me of a while ago, there's a discussion about sushi chefs, whether they should wear gloves when they make sushi. And in Japanese mindset, I think wearing gloves, just because you're wearing gloves, you keep touching different things. It's just even worse than bare hand, right? Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. That's, they just protect their hands, that's it. For the food, for the guests, it's worse than like bare hand.
Right. And the sushi chefs are constantly washing hands. Yes. And then they treat everything with vinegar, which is a very good cleaning, bacteria killing kind of detergent. So yeah, it's interesting, right? Like if you go to Tokyo and you sit on the subway, you feel like sleeping there because it's so clean and comfortable. Whereas New York City, I'm so excited to get on the subway because it's so clean now compared to before, because it's like 4 hours of cleaning every day. I hope it's going to last forever. But yeah, that's interesting. So I think there are many other things that's probably positive about this coronavirus. Now, I think also the restaurant industry workers are not treated as well as they should be in terms of their insurance, for example, and the paid time off, those things. So we'll see what happens. So what do you think is the best way to support your restaurants and the whole restaurant industry right now?
I hope that things get back to normal. So just say, eat a lot, drink a lot.
Yeah, I think everybody's ready for that. Right. By the way, do you speak to other chefs in the restaurant industry?
Yeah, all the time.
So what do you guys talk about?
Yes, it's scary how the things getting the future, probably things not get back to normal. So we never know what's going to happen for the future. Just keep doing our job to making great food, making people happier.
Right. Yeah. By the way, I heard there's a new organization called the New York Japanese Restaurant Association. Do you know the organization?
Yeah.
Okay, I have no idea other than just the details. I mean, the general concept and who's doing it. So are you a part of the organization?
No.
No. Okay. Let's see what's going to happen. But are you interested in joining the organization? I have no idea what it is. So I'm trying to learn about it. So are you interested?
Yes. What's the... we need to make happen some, like, many things. Like you said, the like wearing gloves. That's not good. Especially chef. Why we use the bare hand? Why we use the wooden cutting board? There's a reason why we use. And also history, and why the food industry in Japan is so clean, so safe than New York City.
Right. We can do another episode only about the topic. But I'm curious, why wouldn't cutting board is admired in the Japanese food industry?
It's the natural wood is killing bacteria. Also, for the something like too moisty, and we can shave the if you know, getting dirty or getting not straight, not flat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or easy to wash and easy to dry.
Right. And personally, it's less slippery and you have a better handling of food. It's more stable, in my opinion.
Well, yeah.
Right. And also, I think the problem is goes back to how clean, because you have to use plastic cutting board, which also get some cuts. And just because it's plastic, you can't just leave it. You have to clean it as well as you clean wooden cutting boards. So that's like the huge foundational assumptions. There's a difference. You have to clean it regardless, very, very well. Mm-hmm. And by replacing the material, it doesn't solve any issue, which is sanitation. So, yeah. So anything else you want to do through the kind of Japanese Restaurant Association?
Let's see. Like, we can share the information all together.
Okay.
If the association.
Right. Well, including that kind of specific regulations.
Yes.
And also, right.
Also,
okay.
They try to talk with the city or state.
Right.
We need to.
Right.
So
okay.
Important.
Right. Well, I will look into this. Maybe I can do another episode about this association because I'm very curious. All right. So where can we find your updates online?
Our website and Instagram.
Okay. Which is Hirohisa NYC?
Yes.
Okay. So it's HIROHICANYC.com?
Yes.
Okay, and the ikumi.com? ikumiNYC.com?
Yes.
Okay, so it's IKUMINYC.com, ikumi.com. Okay, so, wow, my congratulations on the new opening, which I didn't know, and also good luck with everything with the reopening. Right. All right, so again, thank you for joining us today, Hiro-san. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money.
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos.
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.